Today is February 2nd, and this is Masoret. We're taking up some areas of Chumash. So we're taking up the story of Moshe Rabbeinu in terms of what the Torah records about him. The incident in which he killed the Egyptian. And obviously he tried to keep it a secret, and it was revealed. And as we said, interestingly enough, it was revealed by the person, the victim that he saved. Although we said it was inadvertent, we did not say that he wanted to get Moshe in trouble, but that's a very important lesson, the dangers of releasing information. That we spoke about. But he was done in by the two Jews that were fighting with each other. Now, somebody asked me a question a few weeks ago, because we take it for granted, once it got out, so then the pasuk says that Vayishma Paro Sadavar Hazeh. Paro heard this thing. Vayavakesh Laharoges Moshe. And he sought to kill Moshe. Oh, but this is on chapter 2 in Shemos. Pasuk Tesva 15. And Moshe ran away from Paro, and he dwelled in the land of Midian, and he dwelled by the Be'er, by the well. The question took me by surprise at first, and that is, the question was, why is it so simple? Why did Paro automatically want to kill Moshe? Isn't it the habit of rulers that they try to cover things up when, after all, he raised Moshe Rabbeinu in his home? I guess he, on some level, he adopted him, whatever it is. I mean, Moshe was not just another person. He was someone who grew up in the palace of Egypt. So why was it so inevitable that as soon as he found out, he sought to kill Moshe? Why wouldn't he cover it up? It's a kind of a disarming question, because we sort of take it for granted that as soon as Paro finds out, he's going to want to kill him. But he based it on a statement, the Chazal, which we'll get to in a minute. Once he raised the question and I began to think about it, there was something to that question. I didn't think it was something you could easily dismiss. Because even aside from that, it doesn't seem that there was any type of investigation. And isn't it possible that Moshe could have offered some kind of a defense? Because in point of fact, was the Egyptian doing the correct... The policy of Egypt wasn't like the Nazis, to destroy the Jews. And even with the Nazis, in certain camps, they wanted the Jews to work. They wanted to exploit all the labor of the Jews. So for somebody to just kill, for an Egyptian officer to just kill a Jew, in and of itself doesn't... It seems that he was going beyond the bounds, or you could have made that case. Moshe could have said that I went out to see what was going on, and this Egyptian was acting out of line. To bolster the question, take a look at Rashi on Yud Aleph, on 11. Because the pasuk uses the word by Yigdal, Moshe, that Moshe literally grew. Vayigdal means to grow up. So, in the pasuk before, in pasuk 10, after it describes the fact that Moshe was nursed by his mother, although apparently the Egyptians didn't know that. We discussed that. And so it says, Vayigdal hayelad, that the lad grew up, and she brought him to the daughter of Pharaoh, and he became a son unto her. Well, that's very important. He became a son unto her. And her father is the king of Egypt. So that also bolsters the point. You'd assume he'd have some kind of protection. And she called his name Moshe because she pulled him from the water. Then the next pasuk says, and it was in those days, Vayigal Moshe, Vayetze Alechav. And Moshe grew up and went out to his brothers, and he saw them in their labors. And he saw the Egyptian man hitting the Hebrew man from his brothers. So in two psukim, one after the other, it uses the word vayigdal. I mean, again, superficially one can say it's superfluous. We already learned that he grew up. Now the plain shot, here's a case where the plain shot is not that difficult. You can figure it out from the psukim. Because the term growing up is obviously relative. Relative to what? Now in the first case, when it says that he grew up, it's with reference to the idea that he no longer had to be weaned. I'm sorry, that he no longer had to be nursed. He was weaned. That's the first level. But he was still a child. He was a child, but he reached the level where he no longer had to be nursed. That's the first Vayigdal. Then the second one, take a look at the pasuk. It says, Vayigdal Moshe Vayetze Alecha. That is, here he matured and became a man. So we don't know how old exactly. Could have been around 13, 14, whatever it was. Obviously, Moshe was very precocious. But it's talking about maturing intellectually, emotionally, and taking an interest in what was going on. So there's really no problem whatsoever. But there's still a midrash. It's still of interest that the Torah uses the same two words. So take a look at the Rashi on verse 11 where it says, Vayigdal Moshe, Valo Kfar Kasa Vayigdal Hayelet. But it already said that the child grew. Amar Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Eloi. So Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Eloi said, Harishon Lakuma, Vasheni Lagdula. He's taking it differently. The first one is for growing up, physical. It's talking of physically. He matured. Vasheni Lagdula. Gedula means power. Shem minu paro al beso. Paro appointed him over his house. So according to Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Eloi, Moshe Rabbeinu became a significant figure. We don't know exactly what the position was. It says Paro appointed him over his house. And we read by Yosef that Yosef was appointed to be in control of the house of Potiphar. So that's a very significant, in this case, it's the house of Pharaoh, who's the king. So according to this, Moshe was a significant individual. And that was the basis of the individual who raised the question. If that's the case, well then you have an additional factor. Not only was Moshe the son, the adopted son of Pharaoh's daughter, who grew up in his house, but according to this, it's Paro himself adopted him and appointed him. He saw his abilities. If that's the case, so what was the what was the inevitability? Why is it that all it says is that Paro heard this thing, and he heard this thing, he sought to kill him. It doesn't seem like there was any interest in trying to save him or any inquiry what the circumstances were, because the more you think about it, it would seem that Moshe could have made a very good defense. Indeed, now we can bring in other factors, because it says that Moshe looked around and there was nobody there. So the Egyptian was dead, there were no witnesses, and except for the Jew, and Moshe could have said that he went crazy, this Egyptian. For no reason he went crazy, and he was beating up on the Jew, killing him, and he intervened. And then there'd be nobody around to contradict that. So that's the question. It's clear from the pasuk that it says Paro heard es hadavar hazeh. By the way, that's also interesting. What's the davar hazeh? What is it? What did he hear? Now, of course, he'll say he heard that he killed the Egyptian. But it's interesting the way it doesn't say that he heard that Moshe killed the Egyptian. It's hadavar hazeh. What's this davar? What is that referring to? Is this, or it's obviously it's referring to the fact that he killed the Egyptians, but maybe it's more than just that. I'm suggesting the way I approach this, I think that the question that has to be raised is that statement of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. What's causing him to interpret it that he appointed him, that Paro appointed him to a position of leadership? As I said, it's not difficult, according to the plain shot, to explain the second Vayigdal. It's clear that it means that he matured. What was the basis? Where is he getting this from, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai? I mean, is that just a fact? Where is that coming from? What I wanted to suggest, perhaps this is the thinking of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, is that the fact that his daughter wanted to adopt Moshe was something which was problematical, because it was contrary to the policy of Egypt at the time. The Jews were marked either for destruction, if you're talking about at the time when the decree was in effect. It seems that after a certain amount of time, it was rescinded. Various reasons are given. But still in all, the Jews were marked for slavery. So here you have an exception. As we learned, there was Hashgacha, the providence that was involved in the saving of Moshe. And that the daughter of Paro came along, and the fact that she had compassion, and every little detail, even the fact that Moshe just happened to be crying and it evoked a certain sympathy. So she was responsible for saving Moshe, and she wanted to bring him into the house of Paro. Yeah, but Paro has to justify this, because it's contrary to the national policy. So what's he going to say? How is he going to justify it? On the basis of the truth that it's his daughter, and she appealed to him, and most probably it would seem that's the case. And you have this many situations where a person makes an exception because of she pleaded with him. It was very important. That may be true, that the real reason why he agreed was simply because it's his daughter and he wanted to make her happy. But he has to be able to justify it, because otherwise it's going to be perceived as weakness. That is, if that's the word gets out that here you have Paro enslaving. The significance of the policy, and all the Jews have to be enslaved and so forth, and they constitute such a danger, and he himself is raising a Jew. So that's, he can't tell them that, well, I can't help it, it's my daughter. I mean, that's weakness. That's not a ruler. So in my opinion, what he sought to do was to utilize this to his advantage. And that is to raise Moshe Rabbeinu. Obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu had tremendous abilities and talents. That was obvious to all. He was precocious. And he studied in whatever, the academies that they had at that time. Again, that's another dimension of the Hashgacha. That that Moshe was not subjected to the enslavement. And B, he was given Egypt was the most advanced culture. He was given every opportunity to learn as much as he could learn. However, it seems to me that this is what Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai is saying, is that he appointed him over his house. And that his defense was that he's going to make him into an Egyptian. And to the contrary, he'll be a tremendous benefit for us. I mean, this is in line, the Chazal, let's say, that the astrologer said that the savior of the Jews is going to be born at a certain time and so forth. They had this begrudging kind of respect for the Jews. That's evident in what they said, that the nation, all anti-Semites have that deep down. They have this tremendous fear of the Jews, and they project tremendous power onto the Jews, that they're going to overpower us and take over and so on and so forth. Oh, so this would be a terrific thing? So if he could have access to this particular Jew, who obviously is tremendously talented, and to make him into an Egyptian, then to the contrary, that's very good for Egypt. They weren't opposed to that. The idea that the Jews were talented people, and the idea of Yosef. Of course, they didn't appreciate, I know it says they didn't know Yosef, but it doesn't mean he didn't know the history. Just that he didn't have any effect upon him anymore. So that would be a very good thing. All of, even the Nazis and so forth, they always sought to operate through the Jews themselves. They set up councils, and the Jews were forced to be on those councils and to have them carry out the policy. So that if Moshe would then be a major leader in Egypt, that would be a tremendous coup. And that would guarantee the success of the policy, because he's a Jew himself, and he's carrying out the Egyptian policy. If you take a look at the... Let's take a look at the psukim now. It says in those days, Vayigal Moshe Vayetzi Alechav. And Moshe grew up and went out to his brothers. It's a reference to the Jews. And he saw them in their labors. And he saw an Egyptian hitting an Ish Ivri Me'echav. So it's pretty obvious that the word Me'echav is superfluous. It didn't even... Alright, so the first time, we know that the Jews are his brothers. It didn't even have to say it the first time. Could have said he went out to the Jews. But instead it uses the word Echav. Okay, fine. But we now already know that the Jews are his brothers. And we would have known it even if the Pasuk didn't say it. So the second time, when it says he sees an Egyptian, Makeh Ish Ivri, hitting a Jewish man, Me'echav, of his brothers, that's clearly superfluous. It should have simply said that he saw an Egyptian, Makeh Ish Ivri. End of Pasuk. The word Me'echav in this case is completely superfluous. So what's the idea behind that? What is the Pasuk trying to communicate over here? What's the theme of this Pasuk? The Pasuk is communicating a lot. A lot of ideas I think we can learn from this one Pasuk. I saw things in the Pasuk that I hadn't seen before. First of all, the idea is going to the heart of this matter. Was Paro successful in transforming Moshe into an Egyptian? The Pasuk is right off the bat telling you, Vayetzei Alecha. The fact that he grew up and he still regarded them as his brothers is telling you a tremendous amount about Moshe Rabbeinu. The issue of identity. That Moshe Rabbeinu did not assimilate at all. He, at no point did he view himself as an Egyptian. Now we said that he retained contact with his family. The Torah doesn't go into all the details. But I think it has to do with... later on, the Torah will point out the great qualities of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Rambam says that of all the virtues, the fact that he was anav miod, that Moshe was the... that he was the most humble person. Which means, see, if a person is very, very humble, the humility, the humbleness of Moshe Rabbeinu, I think it has to do with this. People identify with most people. This is a very significant thing. The fact that even though he was in a position of power and he still cared about his brothers is very, very important. You see it even today, I mean, among different groups, persecuted groups. That, like the blacks, you know, the ghetto, things like that. That if somebody should rise from the ghetto and be appointed to high places, so then if he turns his back, that brings out a lot of resentment. But that's a tendency, because now he can identify with the powerful group. He doesn't have to be with the persecuted group. Obviously, most people... when that happens, they would rather be with the ones who are in power. But Moshe Rabbeinu had that perfection. He didn't need the approval of the Egyptians. Didn't have an effect upon him. He didn't care. And to the contrary, he had a certain sense of Hakaras HaTov. He knew who these people were. And that's the people that he came from. And that they were his family. And he was concerned. He still retained, Vayetzei El Echav means that he still retained his identity, but not just in the sense that he had retained his identity, but he cared. He cared and he wanted to find out. He was still one of them. He wanted to find out what was going on. Now, what I find very interesting, Vayarbis of Losam, is a very, I never realized how significant those two words are. He saw them in their labors. Okay. Well, of course, if he went out to see, if he would see, well, that's what they were doing. That's just describing, isn't that inevitable? Well, why is it necessary to point it out? Okay, I understand. It's telling you there is a certain narrative over here. You have to have the narrative. But is that it? It's just telling you a fact? Because isn't it true that anybody who went out would see them in their labors? Because what else are you going to see? And he saw an Egyptian hitting an Ishivri, Me'achav. Well, again, we tend to take that for granted. But Mike, it seems a little bit strange. How is it that this would happen in the presence of Moshe? That Moshe would just happen to be there when this particular officer was beating up the Jew. I think that it's making a very significant point. For example, often when there's a problem involving the Jews are being persecuted, so you'll have committees are formed and they'll look into the matter. You had this during the Holocaust. Sometimes, you know, Jews would gather, would try to meet with the president or with officers. It didn't come to anything. Because it's not that simple. Whenever there's a certain policy in effect, and they don't want people to see what's going on, so there's a lot of cover-up. Even when the Red Cross, during the Holocaust, when they would try to investigate certain concentration camps, the Germans wouldn't let them go wherever they wanted to go. They'd cover it up, and they'd meet with officials, and they'd present a happy face, and they'd walk away duped. So that's a very significant thing. That you would think, Moshe's going to see. What's he going to do? He's going to walk around the whole country? No, you meet with officials. So you go to the place where there's a work site, and this is Moshe, and you meet with officials, and they'll tell you what they want you to hear. But it's telling you something else, I think. By Yarbus of Losam is very, very big. That he managed to see the truth. He discovered the truth. He was able to break through all of the barriers. And the fact that he was out there in the field or wherever it is, and observing it, and he saw the Egyptian, that shows you the extent to which he was involved, he was engaged in the search for the truth. He didn't accept any kind of a cover-up. He wouldn't accept any kind of nonsense. Whether he disguised who he was and what he had to do in order to make sure that he discovered the truth. I think that's what the pasuk is saying. That's part of the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. Because many people are just content to go through the motions. Okay, we had a meeting, he gave us a report, so on and so forth. This is the situation, and really there's not much we can do. That happens very, very frequently. So, the second Me'achav is very, very important. Because many people have an identity. They'll retain their identity as Jews. So they're interested. And that'll only lead up to a certain point. You know, people care if there's a war in Israel. So maybe they'll go to a rally and protest, whatever it is. They'll give up some of their time. That makes them feel better. Then they go home. Yeah, but what about where you have to get involved personally? That's a whole new dimension. This is a turning point. You could retain your identity and regard them as your brothers, provided that you're still able to go on with your own life. But what about where you have to make a decision? See, until now, he didn't have to turn his back on the Egyptians. He could continue being an Egyptian, and he could identify, have a concern, like Americans. Americans are Americans. And they care about Israel. Yeah, but they're American. Are they prepared to give up their American identity completely for the sake of the Jews? There are very few. This was a completely different situation. A different level of identity. And that is, he's prepared to sacrifice his whole status as an Egyptian and cast his lot with the Jewish people. In spite of the fact that it endangered him. Of course it says, Vayifen kol vachav. This doesn't mean to say that he was reckless. Moshe Rabbeinu was not reckless at all. And indeed, he didn't want to get caught. He didn't want to get killed. Aside from that, he wanted to be able to continue. We don't know what else he would have done, what his plan was. It says, Vayetze Alecha, that he went out to his brothers. Okay, so what would he have done? Assuming that this incident had not happened, and he would not have been in jeopardy. We don't know. But he looked around and he saw that there was nobody there, and he smote the Egyptian and he buried him in the sand. So he thought that he had gotten away with it. Now the incident on the second day is very, very significant. It's very, very interesting. He went out on the second day, and behold, there were two Jews were fighting. And he said to the Russia, why do you hit your friend? According to Chazal, I mean the Rambam brings it down, we learn from here that he's defined as a Russia by lifting up his hand. Even though he hadn't hit him yet, that for the mere lifting of the hand, he's defined as a Russia. It's an interesting point because you could say, well, why? I mean, we don't find this anywhere else. That is, if a person takes steps, he's about to commit a crime, but for whatever reason he doesn't do it, he's not a thief. If he didn't steal, even though he was prepared to steal, he's still not a thief. Yet over here, he's called a Russia for the mere lifting of the hand. I mean, it's a tangential point. It's not the theme of what we're talking about, but while we're on the subject. I think because it doesn't matter over here. The rishos is not merely the fact that you cause pain to somebody else. It's the intimidation. You try to get your way, forcing another individual to do something which is contrary to justice with force. So it doesn't matter whether he actually, from that standpoint, obviously it's different if he actually hits him, there's greater damage. But the rishos, the raising of the hand, and thus the intimidation, the threat of violence over here is what renders a person a Russia. Anyways, that's a side point. So, Vayoma Misam Chaliish. So he said, who made you into a person? Tsar v'shofet aleinu? You're a master and a ruler over us? Okay. I don't know if the implication is that, you know, you're an Egyptian, and then who makes you a ruler over us? I'm not quite sure. At this stage, I don't know how significant that is. It is significant, though, in a different way. Halargenia to Omer, are you planning to kill me, just like you killed the Egyptian? Vayira Moshe Vayomar, and Moshe was very afraid, and he said, Achein no dahadava. The matter is known. Yishma Paro sadavar hazeh. And Paro heard this matter, this thing. What's it referring to? Is it referring only... Is the only thing that's of interest the fact that he killed an Egyptian? And because he killed an Egyptian, he has to be killed? Or is Davar Hazeh referring to something else? Or let me put it a different way. You have two psukim over here that it could be referring to. That is, Paro heard that what takes place in Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayachas HaMitzri, is that what he heard? So now, of course, we don't read that until a few psukim later because we have to know how he found that. But really, Vayishma Paros and Davar Hazeh, is that going back to Vayachas HaMitzri Vayipnei Abachol? Could be. That is, that he smote the Egyptian and buried him in the sand? Or is it all going, it could be both. Or is it also including verse 14? Verses 13 and 14. That is, that he said to the Russia, that whole incident. Is Vayishma Paro referring only to the fact that Moshe killed the Egyptian, or is it also referring to the fact of what takes place on the second day? The business of the second day. That's my question. And, of course, explain. In my opinion, what we read over here, it's Paro's desire to kill Moshe was not simply because he killed the Egyptian. I don't think that was that significant in and of itself. Because, as we said, rulers tend to cover up for their own, people who are important to them. The life of that one Egyptian wasn't as significant as Moshe Rabbeinu, especially if he touted Moshe as a tremendous asset to the Egyptians. Moreover, as we said, there should have been an inquiry. And the way it appears, it's something which could have been defended. That wasn't the factor. What undid Moshe was the fact that Paro realized that he failed. That's why it mentions the word Echav. That's the real theme. The hidden theme, in my opinion, is, and this is another aspect of the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, was that, and how many people could resist such a thing? The average individual? I mean, take a look at the Jews in America, the assimilation factor, especially those who have access and are given promotions and positions of influence. All right, so they may, in America, you don't have to give up your Jewishness, but it becomes very tenuous. Essentially, generally you see the opposite, by the way. It's an interesting phenomenon that in general, when it comes to Jewish candidates and supporting Israel, things of that sort, I find, I'm not saying everyone, but that if you find a Gentile who's pro-Israel, strongly committed to Israel, for whatever reason, and you have a Jew, Jews naturally, everybody assumes pro-Israel, I'd rather go with the Gentile. Because I find that, to the contrary, the Jews are very self-conscious about that. And they don't want to be perceived. They assume that everyone's going to assume that they're just pro-Israel, and they care more about Israel than they do about the United States. So they're very, very cautious, and they tend to go in the other extreme to show that I'm independent. I support America. And very often, they'll be very tough on Israel to prove that point. And you'll find, however, a Gentile doesn't have that problem. And, of course, it depends what his policies are. But if, for whatever reason, he's pro-Israel and he's strongly pro-Israel, he's not ashamed of it. He has no reason to go the other way. So you see that I think a hidden theme is, and it's something we don't focus on, that Moshe Rabbeinu resisted completely the attempt to be influenced by that. He wasn't influenced by any of these things. By the fact that he was in the house of Paro, by the fact that he studied Egyptian culture, that he was a person of power, or he could have been a person of power, he could possibly have been the ruler. All this meant nothing, because Moshe Haya Anav Mikol Adam, that Aniva's factor of Moshe, that he was only concerned in the objective truth, and the perfection of Midos was there. So it didn't taint him at all. He remained a Jew throughout. Now, that became evident, however. You see, Moshe, of course, wanted to cover it up. He couldn't help his brothers if it became known that he was an advocate for them. But you have two incidents. On the first day, when he was confronted with the choice, again, it's not in the abstract. It's one thing, yeah, I can go around and I can feel sorry for the Jews. But to actually intervene and risk my position and have to turn against the Egyptians, that's a different degree of achva, different level of brotherhood. That was the first day, but he took pains to cover it up. The second day is something else. The second day is more of a demonstration of brotherhood, because he saw two Jews fighting, and that bothered him very, very much, because this is not a time to be fighting with each other. And you should be united. In general, he saw a certain defect in the Jews, a certain weakness. In fact, Chazal say, when he says, Achein no dahadava, again, that has two meanings. That he's, behold, the matter is known. Of course, plain shot is that I killed the Egyptian. But Rashi brings in the Medrash, that it's a very interesting Medrash. Achein no dahadava, Rashi says, Kamashmo, plain meaning. Umedrasho, the midrash is, Noda li hadava, shayisi tamei olav. Now I understand the thing that I was wondering about. I couldn't understand. Which shows you that Moshe gave the matter great thought. Machatu Yisrael mikolayin umos. What was the sin of the Jews from all the 70 nations, lios near them bavodas farach? That they should become weighted down. They should be oppressed with back-breaking labor. So you see that's something that troubled Moshe Rabbeinu. And it also indicates that it's not, that there's another side to the story. Why did the Jews allow themselves? What defect is there? There must be some kind of defect. Because this is not just something that, you're a completely innocent victim. Why didn't you resist? Why didn't you take measures to avoid it? What was the defect of the Jews? So he says, Aval roa ani, but now I see shehem ra'uyim l'kach, that they're fit for this, they deserve this. That's very, very harsh. That Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to rebuke them. That's really becoming a sar v'shofet. But that's acting like a Jew. That is to say, Egyptian. This was not the Egyptian philosophy. Rosh Hashanah Masaka Reyecha. That is, by virtue of merely raising your hand, you're considered to be a Rasha. To the contrary, the Egyptians believed in force. This is not somebody who's talking like an Egyptian. This is someone who's concerned about brothers. Again, that's the theme. Reyecha, your friend. Your friend, of course, means your brother, fellow Jew. So he was concerned about the Jewish people in a completely different way. That is, someone who teaches them, who seeks to establish the unity between them, that they shouldn't be involved in fighting. That, I think, is even more telling. That type of a incident is more telling than the first one. Both, of course, add up. That's why I want to say that perhaps Vayishma Paros Adavar Hazeh, Paro heard this Dover. He heard that Moshe Rabbeinu, when Paro saw that he had failed completely, and that was known. It was known. The Jews knew. It was a known thing that he engaged in killing the Egyptian. He could no longer defend. That's no longer defensible. It's clear that he didn't do it because he was trying to implement the Egyptian policy of enslavement. It wasn't under that heading. But rather that he had failed completely. And that Moshe Rabbeinu was not an Egyptian, but not just that, but that he was a Jew, but not just a Jew, but he was a committed Jew. He was a dangerous Jew. Then he had to kill Moshe. It was a double-edged sword. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu was not an ordinary person. Obviously, you see that. And then as soon as he goes to Midian and the daughters of Yisro are oppressed, and he swings into action. So either he would be someone who would be a great asset for the Egyptians, but if not, then that old fear of the Moshiach, that this person could be the Moshiach of the Jews, so then it's automatic. Then, Vayavakesh Laragas Moshe, he had to kill him. He had to get rid of him on every possible level, because it would be it's a tremendous danger to Egypt, it's a danger to him, and it's a tremendous disgrace that his whole policy of seeking to co-opt this great individual and transform him into an Egyptian had completely failed. The question is being raised that later on, when Moshe is with the daughters of Midian, they refer to him as an Ish Mitzri, Hitzilanu, a Egyptian, saved us from the shepherds. So apparently he's criticized for the fact that he addressed as an Egyptian and so on. He was identified as an Egyptian. I don't have a ready answer for that. I have to see what the criticism is, and it's clear. Clearly doesn't mean that that Moshe psychologically believed himself to be, identified in that way. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure once Moshe ran away and separated from the Jewish people, I don't know what his thoughts were. I mean, it's pretty obvious that he had no intention of returning. It would seem that way. He had no way. That's it. He tried, and this is what happened, and he had to run away. So he dwelled by the well. And he spent many, many years, according to the Ramban, he was involved in Gershom. He was a stranger in a foreign land. So he got involved in a completely different world. He separated himself from society. He was completely involved in the world of study and ideas. And it would seem that, I don't know that he had any plans. What could he do? What could he do? Then you have the story of the snare. And the God appears to him, and he's given the mission, which he resists. So we'll have to leave that for the time being. Why they're criticizing him, I'm not sure. I haven't thought about it. Once again, I just want to say that the way we previously understood it, that Moshe's life was jeopardized and he had to run away because he killed an Egyptian, that is, for the crime of murder, I'm saying that's not the way we're learning it right now. That wasn't so terrible. Had Moshe Had Moshe, in many other ways, retained some kind of an identity as an Egyptian and so on, if that's all it was, then he could have gotten away with that. I don't think that's a big deal. But the underlying story over here, which is very, very vital, is the story of Moshe's... It's really telling you the story of Moshe's greatness. We always wonder why it gives you so little about his biography. Just a couple of incidents. But there's much, much more to the incident. It's really the story of how Moshe Rabbeinu grew up in that type of... And the Ashkacha, the divine providence, of course, saw to it that he grew up in a way that he was exposed to his true family and whatever they taught him, of course. Because as we said, you see later on at the burning bush when Hashem talks to him and so forth, and your brother Aharon and all of that. He knew all of this. He knew all of this. So that the identity of Moshe Rabbeinu as belonging to Bnei Yisrael, that he's part of a separate, a unique type of a group, that there's such a phenomenon as the Jewish people and the Avos, and it goes back to the Avos, all of that, Moshe was imbued with that. And of course, Paro, his objective was to uproot that and to transform him into an Egyptian, and it was a complete failure. That's telling you about the qualities of Moshe Rabbeinu. But once again, I want to emphasize that his true love for the Jewish people was not expressed only by killing the Egyptian. That's one thing. That's very, very significant, but that's not the highest level. Because a lot of times a person will, a lot of times a person will get involved and they help somebody, because why should that person kill you? You know, he's a Jew, he wants to keep him alive. But then I'm not going to get involved and rebuke him, and so how he should live his life and teach him morality, that's a completely different phenomenon. Many people don't want to get involved in that. But the fact that he cares to the extent that he's rebuking and he's teaching them proper principles of morality, and he recognizes what a defect this is, that a people that's under pressure and oppression, instead of joining together, are fighting with each other, to the extent that he says, "Achin no da hadava," and now I understand what the defect is, that really shows that the true love that he has for Klal Yisrael. Boy, he's funny. He's funny, this little guy. Now, all the...